ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 161 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I'm glad you're listening because it's the return this week of Jeremy Hahn, one of my favorite artists, and who's getting into some of the writing as well. He's the artist on Constantine right now, and has done a wonderful work on Batwoman and Bad Karma, among other things. We talk a lot about a project that he's got going on at Kickstarter.com called Dino Day Art Book, which we're going to talk quite a bit about. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say about this project, and you still have time to contribute to this worthy book. A brief word of apology. Skype gave me all kinds of fits during the early part of Jeremy's interview, and I did the best I could to clear it all up, but there's still a couple of little fuzzy places, so if you have difficulty hearing exactly what he's saying, you can turn up the volume, and I think you'll understand what he's saying more clearly. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show.
The great thing about having kids is that you get to re-experience the things you loved as a child. Early this year, my 4-year-old son, Owen, asked me to draw him a dinosaur. I draw a lot for my kids, but this was the first time he actually asked me to draw a dinosaur for him. He was really, really into it. He specifically asked for a T-Rex with big teeth. I drew a T-Rex with big teeth, and Owen loved it. So then I drew another. And another. Both boys, Ethan and Owen, got into it. I got into it. So we decided to make dinosaur drawing a regular thing. Out of that came Dino Day. Every Wednesday for nearly the past year, I've drawn a dinosaur. Each week, I ask the boys what to draw. Some of them have been these really involved, intricate drawings. Others have been these kind of on-the-fly things using whatever I have lying around. I've done all different types of dinosaurs in different styles and mediums. Everything from a brush and ink to oil pastels. Whatever I decide that I want to try at the time. And here, I bring to you the collected edition of a year's worth of Dino Day, 52 images in a hardcover sketchbook. I'm Jeremy Hahn. I work for DC Comics, drawing Constantine and Batwoman. I've worked for nearly every major comic company over the past few years, doing everything from Iron Man, Captain America, to The Darkness. I'm also part of the Bad Karma Creative Group. We did a 200-page hardcover graphic novel via Kickstarter in 2013. After a few months of posting Dino Day drawings on my blog, people started to ask if I was planning on collecting them. It was kind of perfect. I was wanting something that I could share later with Ethan and Owen, but at the same time, this was giving me something that I could share with people. I'm combining all 52 weeks worth of drawings into one hardcover book. It'll be a 7x7-inch hardcover book. It'll be about the size of a 45 record. It's going to have 77 pages, containing stuff that both my 52 weeks of posts, but also then some fun stuff from the boys. Look over the project. I've got lots of reward levels. From PDFs of the book, to t-shirts and prints, and of course the book itself. I held on to all of the art from the past year, so I'm even going to make the original artwork from Dino Day available to you. You can pick your favorite piece from the project and get that along with a copy of the book. I've even got a few ultimate packages available. You can choose, within reason, what I'll do for my final Dino Day entry. Kickstarter is a special place for special projects like Dino Day. You get to actively help make something happen, and every bit of your support helps. Thanks so much for your support. I can't do this without you. Everybody loves dinosaurs. Everybody loves dinosaurs.
I want to welcome back to the podcast, Jeremy Hahn, the creator behind such good things as the artwork for Batwoman and currently Constantine, and has a great little project going on that we're going to talk about called Dino Day Art Book. How are you doing today, Jeremy?
I'm great, thanks. How are you?
Good, good. We've listened to the audio of the video that you have out on Kickstarter.com. But why don't we go ahead and talk a little bit more, fill in a couple of the gaps about that. I'm just fascinated, and I did mean to say what a great father you are. You actually involve your kids in your work, which is a great thing to have happen. So the thing I'm fascinated by is, were your sons interested in dinosaurs before you started doing this, or did they get interested as you were doing it?
Owen, whenever I started doing this, was going through a real dinosaur phase. I think all kids kind of do it at different points. And it's about 5 years old, I think, is kind of when it happens most of the time. Or at least it did for both of my boys. And when one gets into something, the other kind of ends up getting it back into it, too. So over the past year, it's kind of been fantastic because Owen's dinosaur obsession kind of became Ethan's dinosaur obsession again, and of course mine too. So, you know, it's pretty much been a year of just loving dinosaurs. Mm-hmm.
What about your wife and stuff? Does she get into these kinds of things? Or, of course, she's living in a house full of guys, so she's probably gotten used to those good things.
Yeah, well, she's certainly involved in it. I think one of the fantastic things about this sort of project is that it allows us to do things as a family. And you kind of hit on this earlier, saying that involving kids in your art, it's not easy in this industry to necessarily involve your kids in your artwork. Mm-hmm. It's long, long hours in the studio. It's ridiculously long hours a lot of times. And while, you know, they come out and watch movies and hang out with me and stuff like this, mm-hmm. this actually gave us a specific excuse to just have a time every week that's completely devoted to that. And that's kind of fantastic.
That's great. Now, one thing I noticed, too, is that you started putting these out on your blog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I found that an interesting development, too, because, you know, normally people don't do those kinds of things on their blogs. It's usually work-related things. So I was kind of fascinated that you made that choice to put them out on the web. Was there a reason why you did that?
Well, originally, it was just going to be a blog piece. It was just going to be this weekly thing that I did. I didn't intend to necessarily do the book out the gate. Keeping up with social media is not easy, posting here and there, especially when you've got three pages due and, you know, a day and a half or something like that. And so having an excuse to say, you know, every Wednesday I'm going to post this thing was kind of nice. And if you look at the blog over the course of the past year, I think that it's an odd look into how things were going in my career to a degree, maybe a few times what my mental state was. I didn't plan for the way it all has come together, but I really like it.
Mm-hmm. Well, the book's going to be interesting, too. You've chosen an interesting size, a 7x7 book, and the illustrations usually fall into that size. Was there a reason why you used that size? Was that the paper you had available? Why did you choose 7x7?
Well, honestly, it just reminds me of a 45 record. Mm-hmm. I just thought that's kind of a perfect size. I felt like you get smaller than that, and the images are kind of dinky. You get much bigger, and I wanted something it felt substantial enough, but didn't feel like I was trying to create a coffee table book or something like that. Mm-hmm. The images, like actual art, it kind of ranges. At first, I was going to do something smaller, like CD case size, like 5x5 or something like that. But then as I would go, there would be weeks where I quite literally had 25 minutes to spare and had to draw something quickly and make it fun and still try to come up with something creative. And there are other times where I wanted to do something painted or something really involved and was doing images that were 11x11 or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it kind of varied a little bit.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of funny, of course. You vary the pictures up a little bit. One of my very favorite ones, of course, being a Batman fan, is the one with the dinosaur wearing the Batman cape and cowl.
Yeah.
And you've got
that. So that was a popular one.
You've got people in the back. There's something in the background going, na, 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 na. And did that come about because of the Blu-rays and DVDs coming out, or was that just, it just kind of hit you because of Batman fan?
We were just talking about it one day, and the boys thought it was a fun idea. And so I drew it. That's kind of the great thing. It's like, while the pieces are incredibly varied in content, there's always this joy in making each other laugh. Mm-hmm. And you know, that was the one that definitely made us laugh. And I think it's funny, like going to conventions and having that piece at conventions and stuff like that. People would see it, and some would get that it was the na-na-na-na-na-na-na. Mm-hmm. And then some people wouldn't get that at all. And there would be varied reactions, but the people that really got it and understood it from the TV show, it was kind of fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Pretty interesting. You've also do some other anthropomorphic things with the dinosaurs as well, with some of them wearing clothes. There's one that's a guy's got a headset on, and I always get a kick out of all that stuff. It's because, you know, if you just did a straight dinosaur thing, it wouldn't be all that creative, but the way that you've varied it up really well has made it a really fun thing to look at, really enjoyable.
Yeah, I think the first 2 or 3 weeks, I really felt like I should keep it as just dinosaur studies and was serious. And then the bat dino really was the one where I was like, no, we're going to have fun. We're just going to do kind of whatever strikes us. And about halfway through it, I really was like, I'm even going to, you know, let go a little more and just be as silly as possible sometimes. So.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. Well, of course, kids love that.
Yeah.
Your sons probably really enjoy it. The sometimes the sillier you get, the more they enjoy that kind of thing. So it's pretty good. Was there one dinosaur you ended up drawing more than the others?
I mean, I think the T-Rex is probably one of the most common. There are several Brachiosaurus, quite a few raptors. When you ask a five-year-old what he wants you to draw, it's going to be a T-Rex or it's going to be a raptor pretty much most of the time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it varied, and I really tried to keep it. Like, that was one of the fun things was while I was asking them what they wanted me to draw, there were also times where we would look through dinosaur books and kind of pick one and, you know, talk about it a little bit and why this one was different and cool. And at one point, we rewatched the Jurassic Park movies, and in watching those, you know, we even talked about some of the dinosaurs in that and what they did. It was kind of fun. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of a great thing to do as a group, as a family, is to do those kind of things, share those interests. It's something that later on they'll probably always look back on as a very important part of the bonding of the family.
Yeah, well, I mean, I hope so. I think that they're going to remember it in different ways, too, and that's kind of nice. You know, you think about little things that you did with your parents as a kid, and they stand out in different ways. As siblings, we remember things differently. I know that Ethan, especially my 10-year-old, he ends up, because I pick him up from school every day at 3 o'clock, and then he's here until Lori and Ellen get home at 5:30. Mm-hmm. It's just the two of us for a couple of hours, and we always kind of draw together. And he sits out here in the studio drawing or writing stories or working on homework or something like that. And as a parent that works as much as I do, there's always this fear and, you know, almost guilt, like, oh, you know, I don't really necessarily get to always spend as much time doing exactly what I would like to do with them. But I think that the kind of experiences that we have with this sort of thing are really important. And I think they're just as valid and good as some other things, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, the one thing, of course, I did notice that when I was a kid, we used to have, and you've drawn some of these, the little dinosaurs that had the little plastic bottoms on them that you could stand. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I saw a couple of them. There's at least two in there. I saw a brontosaurus and looks like a stegosaurus. One's green and one's purple. And I always, that flashed me back to being a kid again when I saw those. Because you used to buy them by the bag. You get a great big bag full of these ones. And I don't even know if they make those anymore.
Yeah, I mean, they do. That was one of the things that, of course, as we got into this, you start finding yourself going on Amazon and picking up various things. And yeah, you know, all that stuff's still out there in, you know, the bags of just little plastic dinosaurs. I've bought them a few bags, actually. Mm-hmm. And they like those. And they have some that are just like the same small scale, but they're actually like skeletons of them. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite things was some fans of mine who have become fan friends, really. Every year at Heroes Con in Charlotte, they come and, you know, I see them and they enjoy my work and pick up a couple sketches. And we ended up becoming pretty close over the years. And this last year, after I started Dino Day, they brought me a gift. And it was one of the things that I drew in there was a box of Moldorama dinosaurs, which are that fantastic Moldorama stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's become pretty rare, but you can still get it in a couple of places. And the Field Museum in Chicago is one that has it. And so... Mm-hmm.
Very cool. So this thing's kind of caught on with all these things. Now, one of the things that you offer as well, and I'm just curious, this made me think of the Mary Marvel Marching Society. You have a T-shirt that says the Dino Day Society on it. Mm-hmm. Are you going to set up a Dino Day Society kind of club, or is this kind of just for the shirt, or how's that going to work?
Well, actually, it all fits together. I'll send you a link to it. But what I started doing, you know, doing a Kickstarter is a very different process. You end up working hard and promoting and really trying to get people involved. And so much of it is based around getting people excited about a project, but sharing it and telling people about it. You know, it's crowdfunding. And, you know, I think if you're not careful, there's a negative connotation to it sometimes. Mm-hmm. People see it like you're asking for a handout, which is not really the way it is at all. It's actually, you're asking people who are interested in something to pre-order it. Effectively, there were things I remember even when I was a kid that, like, I would mail order something, and then when it came in, it came in. It's not too far from that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I wanted to do, though, was make it feel like it was a fan club. Like, I was a part of Famous Monsters of Filmland, the club, whenever I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And those things, like the Marvel Society or the Monster Societies that were out there and those sorts of things, there were all these like cool, John Suntra is a friend of mine. We were talking about, he was in the Archie fan club as a kid. And those were just fantastic. They're exciting. You get a membership card that's kind of retro and fun. Or, well, it was, of course, they were older then, but now they would be retro. And so I just wanted to make something that people could have. And I wanted to send them out for free. And I didn't want it to be something that it, I wasn't wanting to pressure anybody. I just wanted it to be in the sense of fun. And so I did this. I called them Dino Crates. You know, there's like Loot Crate now that's a popular thing. And so I kind of swiped part of the name. But what I've done is I've sent out about 100 of these Dino Crates, and it's a membership card. And on it, I, using a typeface font, I type out the person's name and then their membership number, and I sign it in blue ballpoint pen. So it's got a membership card. It's got a button that has that Dino Day Society bullet on it, like you saw on the t-shirt. And it's got a couple plastic dinosaurs, like we were talking about earlier. In there. And then I made these little mini prints. They're like 4x4 colored, really nice prints that my buddy John Roush worked on that he colored for me. And I just put them in a box and I've shipped them out to people. And actually, once all this is said and done, I'll make sure and get your address so I can send you one.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, but yeah, it's just the sense of fun. It's just trying to create these things that people can like and want to talk about because they're kind of cool.
You know, so often today we've lost that sense of fun. Everything is hard, and you know, even when you video game, you've got multiple levels to go through, and everything is a fight or a struggle to go through. To actually enjoy what you're doing sometimes, like this is, has become for you, is really kind of a nice thing to see happen. It's something unusual today.
I completely agree. I think this loss of the sense of fun, it's robbing us of joy. And I think that that's, you know, not to go too dark, but I think that that's a societal issue. I think that we don't have the kind of fun we used to have. We don't allow ourselves. It's a cynical time. And I think that something like this, what I was wanting to do was hearkening back to how I felt as a 5 to 10 year old kid, cutting out a thing from my comic book and sending it in. And that feeling of just being a part of something and loving something, you know, we don't allow ourselves to do it enough.
Not anymore. And it's really cool that you're doing that for your kids too, because one of the fun things about the video, when you look at it, you get to see them playing with dinosaurs. Another thing that brought me back to being a kid, you know, was that we used to do those kinds of things all the time. You know, I was really terrible at building things. I was really horrible at their models or any kind of things like that. If we had a dinosaur model, it would end up, glue would be all over the thing. It would be totally stuck together all wrong and everything would be bad. So to see these kinds of things and to see them actually get to play with stuff that actually looks pretty good is a nice thing to see for them. And I'm glad for them to be able to do that.
Yeah, they're having fun with it. And I think that now that we've kind of hit the point where we've done a couple of local TV interviews and things like that, they're getting it more. Like the moment they saw the Kickstarter video, they were like, oh, okay, this is actually, you know, it's more than just drawing with Dad. It's kind of a big deal. And that was cool.
But you didn't plan that when you started this, right? You just planned this to be something you did with your kids. It's turned into, blossomed into something so much bigger. But did that surprise you when this thing kind of took off on you?
I think about the point where the fourth or fifth person that was emailing me or messaging me regularly asking if I was going to put a book together. Okay, really? Like, you know, I didn't expect the response to be what it was. It's, you know, we as creators, we draw things. I'm here in a fairly dark studio, you know, we're in these spaces and we work, and you don't always think about the fact that your audience wants things quite as much as you do. And I think because of the cynical nature of the social media, you know, you tend to just look at things and go, ugh, nobody's going to want this. This is silly. But people do, and people do get excited about stuff.
Because at the time we're recording this, you already have 129 backers. And at this point, and of course this will air a couple days from now, but you get 21 days to go, and you're almost two-thirds of the way there.
Yes.
So this is resounding with people. I love it when something takes off and people don't expect it. Because you know the story of Harry Potter, you know, the lady that was writing that. The only reason she wrote the stuff was because she had a child and she couldn't work for a living. And she started to write this thing and she was so poor that she couldn't afford to get the first copy Xeroxed. All she could afford to do was sit down and type it over again so that she had two copies to go. And then when it landed, it just took off like this explosion. And to this day, she's probably one of the richest women on Earth.
Yeah.
I just find that kind of thing. I mean, not that you're going to be one of the richest guys on Earth when this kid's, but it's kind of neat when something that you come up with as a creator catches on with people. And that must be gratifying to you. Not only your sons, but other people as well are really showing interest in this project.
Well, not to get too silly about it, but it's magic. I mean, I'm nearly 40 now, and I remember being back in 85, really getting into all of this fun stuff, being 10 years old, and it was harder to get. And then as I got older, you know, I was getting out of high school and the internet started to become a more available, prevalent thing. Mm-hmm. And it was still hard to be able to get your work out there on any level. Mm-hmm. And now I remember my mom talking to me and she was like, well, so are you going to move to New York? What are you going to do to be able to get your work seen by people? And I was like, I had no idea, but I'm going to do it. But now you can have a 15-year-old girl sitting in her basement in Neosho, Missouri, or in Montana somewhere. Mm-hmm. And she can create something that she's passionate about. Mm-hmm. She can put it online and share it with the world. Mm-hmm. And there is a window for that access. Mm-hmm. I've got friends and their kids are making little short YouTube movies and things like that. And they're 12 and 13 years old. And for as tough as things can still be, we live in a different time. You can make something, and with some work and understanding, you can take a book and get it funded and get people excited about it and fully get it out into people's hands without having to go through the terrible process that we used to make things.
You know, I have the saying I keep telling people is that I always wonder what kind of wonderful stories we missed because there wasn't Kickstarter.com before recently. You know, how many great things were out there, but they never saw the light of day just because they couldn't get funding, things like that. So it's such a good time for you. This is the ideal time for you and your family and stuff to be involved in these things.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm very excited about it. And consistently, every time I hit refresh on the Kickstarter page and watch it go up a little bit, I'm just blown away because that's a lot of faith for somebody to have in your work. And it definitely means a lot.
Now, your sons are actually contributing some stuff to this book, as I understand it, too. Are they doing some of their drawings are going to be in there? How's this going to work?
What we've done is, and on the blog, you can see more of it, but I haven't shown much as far as the book goes. But every time that I do a piece, more with the black and white pieces, of course, because, you know, the color stuff's colored. But I'll print out the black and white pieces on nice paper, and then I'll let the boys go in and color them and do whatever they want to do. Oh. And then Ethan, being older and more adept a little bit, he draws his own pieces. So he'll pencil and color several pieces that he's done along the way. Mm-hmm. And there's two pieces that have actually ended up in the book that we did where Ethan did the pencils on a piece and then I inked it over him. So that's like true collaboration stuff. And yeah, we actually have done that before on other stuff. And it was something that we were kind of talking about. And I asked him if he'd like doing that. And he was like, sure, that sounds awesome. So yeah, the plan, because it's a 72-page book and I've got 52 drawings. So I wanted 20 extra pages that we could kind of show some of that stuff. So there's going to be about probably 15 pages of their content that's going to be in the book, just showing the stuff that they colored and drawn their own and stuff like that.
Now, the project needs to be funded by Friday, February the 6th at 12:59 a.m. So if somebody right now is listening, of course, go to Kickstarter.com, and you can look your name up. The easiest way to find it seems to me, the Jeremy Haun, H-A-U-N, and you'll see your previous project, and this one is out there as well.
Yeah.
So you can still see the other one and see how successful that was, and you can also see this one. So, you know, you're doing pretty well, though, as far as things go. It's kind of a neat thing to see something take off like this, like I was saying. And I just think that it's such a cool Yeah, it's great when something actually resonates and you don't expect it to, which makes me wonder, you know, now that you've done this project and you're basically going to be done with that, are you and your sons going to develop something else to do on the blog once this is complete?
Maybe, yeah. We've been talking about it a little bit. One of the things that I was kind of thinking about was the varied things that we're into as a family. Owen, aside from dinosaurs, Owen is really into Pacific Rim. Mm. And he's really into Legos. Mm. We're all into Lego. Like crazy. Mm-hmm. And then just recently, because of the 7th Star Wars movie being announced and seeing the trailer for it and everything, we've kind of gotten back into Star Wars big time. Mm. And Ethan is into Minecraft and into mainstream comics and into just, you know, tons of things between all of us. And I was thinking about it, and I thought it would be really fun to do a project where maybe every week I just tried to do something that was pop culture related, just something that we're into doing, something that was even maybe a movie that we're watching together, or maybe a movie I'm watching, you know, just kind of open the possibilities a little bit. And just, if I want to draw a Stormtrooper this week, I can draw a Stormtrooper. And if I want to next week draw Darkness, the big devil from Legend, I can do that.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as getting the books themselves, you need to go through Kickstarter.com to get it. Is this going to go to, like, bookstores or comic shops? How's this going to end up as far as, you know, availability for people who are interested in it?
I have no idea. You know, being on the Kickstarter. To be honest, this is probably a short-sighted thing on my part, but I like the purity of something like Kickstarter. I like that, at least starting out, I want this to be something that's available to my fans that have supported the project. And I'm sure that after I get it shipped out to everybody else and I fulfilled everything, I'll have it conditions and stuff like that. But I don't know about the bigger picture beyond that. It's such a personal project that in some ways I'm sure that it has a wider audience, but I really hadn't thought about the wider audience just because I was like, this is a thing that I'm doing with my boys. And you know, I don't know beyond that. So I guess we'll have to see.
Mm-hmm. Well, if the demand comes out, you could always go back to press.
Sure.
So as far as that goes. And I just want to let people know I've already signed up and supported this project as well. So I'm looking forward to getting that. I'm going to get a signed copy of the book, which I'm looking forward to getting. And I think it's just a wonderful thing to see something like this happen and be fun and be family-oriented and be something that I hope inspires other people to do these kinds of things, because we need more of these kinds of projects where families work together, or, you know, you touch a nerve out in the public and it makes things really happen and people remember what fun's all about. So I really do think this has been a great project, and I'm really glad you're doing it, and I'm sure it's going to more than meet its goal. So that's going to be a great thing.
Well, thank you. I hope so.
Now, before I let you go, I'm going to ask for a little update on how your other projects are doing.
Oh, absolutely.
Because Constantine, when I talked with you last, you were just getting ready to have your first issue come out. How's things been going with Constantine now that the TV show's out and the book's going along? What's going on with that publication?
It's been kind of fantastic. Constantine has been a title, I think, that people like it, but I think it's got a hardcore audience, and you know, it doesn't sell as well as something like Batman or something like that. And so it's kind of always been right on that line of like, is it a successful book or not? But we've had a real upswing since we started this arc. And the numbers are kind of climbing and people are really liking it. So the response has been fantastic. We've had Ray and I working on the book. We wanted to go in and tell this story, and it's kind of a different story because it takes place on Earth 2 and it's amidst a big event kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it's not, you can, there, a lot of tie-in stuff gets embarrassing because you're like, oh yeah, you know, I've got this new book and it's starting and it takes place smack dab in the middle of whatever big event's going on, and it doesn't make any sense because of that. Mm-hmm. Ray and I, we were allowed to craft something that became a really personal story about loss and about trying. He sees his family again, and he wants to save them and wants to have them back. He loves them, and he's a greedy person. You know, he's human. And John does the best he can, but he's John Constantine in the end, and he's going to fail, or, you know, to a degree. I think, you know, there's always small successes, but I think that in the end, if you're trying to do something that's absolutely for the people that you love, and it's not a 100% success, you might yourself consider it a failure. Even if it's 80% success, mm-hmm. it's still, you know, not quite perfect, and you're going to blame yourself for that. And so, mm-hmm.
yeah. I get one more question I want to ask you about, but before we leave Constantine, I want to know what you think about the TV show. And you know, don't if you don't like it, you know, don't get in trouble.
No, I've only seen the first couple of episodes, and I thought they were fun. I mean, Matt Ryan, I don't know that you could actually take a human being and create them from a character on the page so well. You know, I'm sure when you saw that first image of him that they did as pre-press for the show, it was just perfect. And it's amazing seeing that on the screen. I think that, you know, there's a lot of supernatural shows out there right now, a lot of with this theme. And I think that this falls into that, and it's, you know, really finding its feet. I was talking to a buddy recently, and we were talking about Constantine, and I said that people immediately kind of, they want to hate on stuff. Like, the second episode, they're like, oh, this is crap. This is terrible. And I was talking about it, though, and I was like, do you remember Buffy? We watched that first season, and we're kind of like, it's okay. It's kind of silly. It's kind of a mess. And then you get to the second season, and then you get to, like, the end of the second season of Buffy, and you're like, okay, this is good. And then, like, the third season, you're like, okay, this is really good. And TV builds. We're such entitled consumers now. You know, we really expect, and certain things hit right from the beginning. You know, you look at Breaking Bad or something like that, you're just like sitting there like wiping your brow, just in amazement at the end of the pilot episode. That happens sometimes. But even some of the shows that we love and hold dear, we go back and look at those and we're like, wow, that actually had to find its feet. And I think that Constantine's off to a good start. And I'm glad that everybody was really thinking for a little while that it was possibly going to get canceled. I'm glad that they're not doing that. I'm glad they're going to do more. Because I think that the second half of the first season is really going to be stronger. I hope and think that they're going to get a second season. And it's just going to build and build from there.
Well, right now, of course, this is a great time to be a DC Comics character. You've got Gotham on Monday nights. You've got Tuesday night, you've got The Flash. Wednesday night, you've got Arrow. Friday night, you've got Constantine. We've got all these shows coming on. You know, you've got Titans supposedly coming. You've got Krypton. Supergirl's going to be on CBS and what they're starting to call the Arrowverse now. And all these things are going on. This is, I think this is a good thing for Constantine. I think the fact that there are other shows, maybe they're a little more highly rated, but that might give NBC, and of course NBC could stand a couple of hits, it might give them a chance to give Constantine a little longer to find its way. You were talking about the fact that we are, as consumers, expect things to hit the ground running really well. Well, we're not the only ones. The TV networks do that too. They expect when a show hits, it's going to start strong and it's going to build and build and build. And if it doesn't do that, then they're in trouble. And so I think Constantine, if NBC is smart, they're going to do, like you say, they're going to let it go and build itself up. And, you know, it's paired with Grimm, which is a good companion piece. Mm-hmm. So I'm hopeful that Constantine will keep going. I mean, The Flash is a huge hit. I mean, Gotham is a huge hit. Right. Arrow has been going on for years and has been building. And so we need Constantine to get that kind of thing. It hasn't hit the ground running as fast as the others, but it ought to show NBC that there's potential in there to keep going. So that's what I'm hoping.
Well, you know what? If nothing else, just thank God it's not on Fox. That's at least it's not on Fox. That would they would be like, oh, it's on Friday night. Can we put it on at 2 a.m. on Sunday? You know, like, I mean, that's Fox. It's rough sometimes.
It's tough. But Gotham, they're happy with Gotham, thankfully. And I like Gotham as well. But I was reading your description there. You were talking about a book from DC Comics called Wolf Moon. And I happen not to know anything about that one. So I said, man, I got to ask him about that. Do you want to talk a little bit about what Wolf Moon is and what your involvement is with it?
Yeah, Cullen Bunn, who writes everything right now. Cullen and I have been friends for years. We're both Missouri boys, and he lives in St. Louis, and I live in Joplin. Opposite sides of the state, but through the local circuit, you know, we've gotten to know each other. We got to know each other years ago and been friends since. And we had an opportunity to pitch a creator-owned idea. And threw some things around, and Cullen pitched this slightly different take on the werewolf mythos. Mm. And I loved it and wanted to draw it. And DC loved it and wanted me to draw it, wanted us to do it. Mm-hmm. And so we put the project together, and we both have a lot of love for horror. It's kind of our go-to genre in some ways. And so we started work on the project, and it kind of moved where in DC it was going to fall for a little while, but it ended up being perfectly so, ended up being in Vertigo. Mm. But the story is basically, it's rather than the virus, the wolf being transferred via a bite, mm-hmm. it doesn't work like that. It actually jumps host. Mm. And as far as we know in the story, there's one. Mm. But while on the full moon, you may get it and basically then do what wolves do and rip and maim your way through your life. At the end of the cycle, you're left with that havoc that it wrecks on you, and it jumps to someone else. Mm. And it's, and there's not really rhyme or reason that we really see in the beginning as to why it's happening and where it's moving. Mm-hmm. And it destroys lives. You'll have, a young mother who it'll happen to in one area, and then it'll jump across the country, and a teenage kid will get it, mm-hmm. and then it'll jump to an elderly man in a nursing home somewhere, mm-hmm. or something. Yeah, the story focuses on Dylan, this character that he was one of the people that was affected by the wolf, and it, through him, destroyed his family and destroyed his life. Mm-hmm. And so now he's on a quest for revenge, but also redemption. He wants to stop this from ever happening to anybody else.
Sounds great. So any idea when this is going to hit the stores?
It's actually, the first two issues are out.
Oh, they are? Yeah. I've got to go back and find these then.
Yeah. The first two issues are on the stands right now. Issue two came out 2 weeks ago. Issue three is due in, I think, 3 weeks, maybe. We're on track.
Great. Now, it's my understanding that Batwoman's been canceled. And I was just kind of, I wanted to get your reaction to that, because I know that you did a great job on there, and people really loved your artwork on it. And I was, in one way, I was sorry when they moved you off Batwoman, because Constantine, you've done a great job on that book. I just kind of was curious as to what was going to happen to Batwoman. And of course, the ultimate price to pay whenever you change the creative team is that the book gets canceled. What was your feeling about that when you found out that Batwoman was being canceled?
I was sad. We knew that it was on the chopping block for a while. And the thing I think right now that people, especially with the way sometimes that this stuff is presented in social media, there's a lot more to it often than meets the eye. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of restructuring going on right now, mm-hmm. with the books at the DCU. March and April are going to be very, very interesting, mm-hmm. for what's going to be happening and what we're going to be getting. And everybody, myself included, we're sad to see it go, but Kate Kane is not done in the DCU. We will see more, and I'm not sure that it's going to happen, immediately right in March or April, but I do know that we will see more, and I'm excited about what is going to come of it. I left at another interesting time in her story, mm-hmm. and I hated doing so, but I also felt like, for me, I love Batwoman as a character, but my love was really for Kate, mm-hmm. and her story. And for me, the story that I loved telling and that I really wanted to tell was this love story between Kate and Maggie. Mm-hmm. And with things happening the way that they did and the relationship changing, I told the story that I wanted to tell. And it was a good place to leave, a hard place. But like I said, we'll see more of Kate Kane.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to ask you this question, and if you want to dance around it, that's perfectly fine with me. We've got Convergence coming, mm-hmm. and we don't know what in the world is coming after Convergence. Mm-hmm. Are you going to be able to continue to provide product that we can buy as fans through DC that you know of?
I dance around it. It's kind of, a lot of stuff's changing, right. But I'm really not sure where things are going to be for me creatively, but actually more along the lines, because of some choices that I have made about my career. This next year, in 2015, I'm going to be doing some creator-owned work again. And that's not DC giving me the boot, and that's not me saying, screw you guys, I'm going home. I had been putting off a lot of the creator-owned stories that I wanted to tell, and I know that I talked about the beauty last time we talked. Mm-hmm. And it's time for me to do that. It's time for me to finish that story. And then I, depending on how that goes, I have one more thing that I would really like to do also. Mm-hmm. Every change with a company is both incredibly positive and negative at the same time. We read these books. Mm-hmm. I'm as big a fan as everybody out there. I was talking last night, and it was a light week for me in some ways, but I still had 23 books or something like that. And we don't want change. We don't want these things that happen, but they do happen. Mm-hmm. And you'll get a character that you'll be like, oh, I love that costume. And then you don't love the redesign or something like that. Or they kill someone that you're really fond of. And I think comics are kind of like the weather in the Midwest. You know, just stick around. It's going to change. You know, it won't be the same tomorrow as it was today.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Well, the important thing is that you get to tell the stories that you want.
Right.
You know, and that's the thing that matters if it's for DC. And, you know, there's so many people now that work for multiple companies. You know, it's like Frank J. Barbier. He's working for Dark Horse. He's working for Dynamite. He's working for all these different places. What he does is he takes one property to one company that likes that kind of property, and they'll print it, and then they'll go to something else to another company. And I think that that's kind of the way, if you're a creator, that's probably the way to be these days. This exclusive contract business is probably not going to be something we'll see much of in the future. I think like someone like you, if you've got projects that you want to take, and it's something that, say, DC doesn't want, you could always ship it to Image and say, well, what about you guys?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and I think that that's a dynamic that's really changing. I have friends that have no desire to do creator-owned books. They are guys that are just dyed-in-the-wool. They will write or draw big two books for their entire career and be absolutely happy with it. And I have a ton of respect for that. And then I have friends that are the complete other side of things, where they have no interest in doing mainstream titles. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of right in the middle. I want to play in all the sandboxes, man. I love telling my stories, and I love telling stories about John Constantine and Kate Kane. And I love that I can do a Riddler one shot and play around, you know, with that character. There's infinite possibilities out there. And kind of what you hit on, it's like, you know, now if you play it smart and you realize that this story goes over here and this story goes over there, and this is a character that I like to talk about and I have a story to tell with them, you can do it over here. And have fun and just play around.
That's the thing. Last week I got to interview Scott Collins. He's with Matt Kent. They're doing Pastaways for Dark Horse.
Yeah.
And I was talking with him, and he was saying, well, you know, when somebody comes and offers me a job, to me it doesn't matter if it's DC or if it's Dark Horse or if it's something that we've come up with and somebody else wants us to do it. You know, he says, as long as I get to do these kinds of things, I get to tell the stories that I enjoy telling, then I'm pretty happy. And that kind of sounds like where you're coming from, too, is that, you know, you like working for DC, and you don't mind telling other stories and going for other places if that's where you can get those stories told.
Right.
So that's pretty cool stuff. Well, you know, as long as you keep doing that, keep doing stuff, that producing the good things, we'll be glad to buy the stuff. I do want to get one more last update, and that was about Bad Karma. Had any progress on that coming along? Because the first book came out a couple years ago. I still enjoy pulling it out every once in a while and reading the stories. Are you guys having any plans that are developing as far as another issue of Bad Karma?
We're definitely working on it. The thing that I don't think any of us really could have expected was that the moment that finished that project, that we were going to all be as busy as we were. You know, Alex's career as a novelist really took off. I've been busy doing stuff at the DCU and trying to work on other stuff. And moreover, to a few of the guys that were drawing the projects that we were writing, got pretty busy themselves too along the way. And with a project this big, trying to line up all of the moving parts, it gets a little tough. But we're working on it. I know Alex is doing one of the main stories, and well, it's really the story that everything else kind of falls around, and that's completely done, penciled, inked.
Cool. Yeah,
I think letters are even done on it. Other projects, there's some writing that has been done, but you know, they're still being worked on. But we definitely, it's something that we want to work on. And being friends, you know, we want to get out there. It's just a matter of the right thing at the right time.
Cool. Well, I said that was the last question, but another thing comes to mind. Are there other projects you're working on? It's hard to think of such a thing, as busy as you are. Are there other projects besides the stuff that we've talked about that you want people to know about, or is that kind of keeping you busy?
Well, I mean, right now the focus is really finishing up Constantine and doing Wolf Moon and the Dino Day project. I do have a lot of stories that I want to tell. I'm in the process of, I did a book called Narcoleptic Sunday with a buddy of mine, Brian Koshak. I wrote it and he drew it. And Brian is currently working on the art for this next thing that we're doing. And it takes place during the 70s. And it's a kind of a crazy story. And I'm developing something right now with Seth Peck, who I worked with on Bad Karma. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a pretty big, if everything lines up the way I want it to, it's going to be a pretty huge project. And one of the things that I really enjoy is not limiting myself as far as genre at all. I really love mixing it up. Some guys, you know, they're like, I only do noir or something, whatever, or comedy or whatever it is. But I like all kinds of different stories. And one that I'm really wanting to get to and that we're working on is a fantasy story. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a different kind of fantasy. Mm-hmm. But I posted a couple times recently that as I get closer and closer to 40, I find myself just wanting to listen to metal and play D&D all the time. So I think I'm just being pulled in that direction.
Well, Jeremy, you make great product, may I say, and I have enjoyed reading everything. I cannot believe I missed Wolf Moon. I'm going to be after that. But keep up the great work, and I'm looking forward to a successful finish to your Kickstarter project on the Dino Day art book. And, you know, I'm going to have to keep a better ear to the ground, so I make sure I keep up with the things you're doing. Because always a good story, always great art when I pick up something with your name on it, and I really like it. And so I wish you continued success and that you get to tell all the stories you're dying to tell.
Well, thanks so much, man. I really appreciate it.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
Now at MajorSpoilers.com. And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.